The pilot. The set is out of adjustment. A green streak slashes diagonally through the viewing cube, impales the smiling host. She tries to adjust it by softly licking a molar, remembers, curses economically, turns a knob until the streak disappears, another knob to sharpen the image. Host smiling goodbye to someone. Feel of cold metal sticks to her thumb and finger until she rubs it away on her thigh, disgusted, nose wrinkling. How many filthy traveling salesmen and conventioneers and hotel maids have touched these knobs since they were last sterilized? Have they ever been sterilized? Our next guest is a woman with a marvelously rare occupation. Occupation. He smiles off cube, and the picture scale diminishes to include her as well, not smiling, trying not to fidget on the filthy leather chair. She is a spaceship pilot. I am a spaceship. But no ordinary rocket, Jock. She pilots a slow boat between the Earth and the outer solar system. The asteroids, even as far as Saturn. Her name is Lydia Meininger, and she's a fellow New Yorker. New Yorker. Lydia, would you tell us something about slow boats? How they... In the first place, she interrupts, they aren't slow. They go much faster than anything you use in the Earth-Moon system. The name is a hangover from the old robot tugs that crawled along on Homon transfer orbits to minimize fuel use. A Homon tug took 6 years to get to Saturn. I can make it in 13 months. 9 months with a Jupiter flyby, but I can't do that with passengers.
Because of the radiation?
That's right. Warm like summer sunshine. They can't wrap everyone up in lead the way I am. That's probably the most fascinating aspect of your job, Lydia. The way you're wired up to the ship, you're actually part of it. I am the ship, you actual fool. Wired up is a little extreme. They don't use surgical implants anymore, just induction plates pasted over various organs. There are a few small wires associated with the somatic feedback system. Oh, slow ecstasy. But they enter through natural body openings, and you hardly feel them once they're in place. This feedback thing, this is how you control the ship? That's right. There's an initial calibration that, well, as long as I feel good, then every system in the ship is working properly. If any system varies from its expected performance, I feel it as an illness or slight pain. The nature and intensity of the wrongness tells me which system is involved and gives me an idea as to the severity of the malfunction. For instance, a hydrogen ullage problem where the fuel flow is momentarily uneven, I feel as a hot spasm of... Screen goes white. Low chime. Tum. Host smirking behind filthy hand.
Afraid the sensor won't let that slip by, Lydia.
They live in shit, so can't talk about it. Chuckles.
It doesn't seem very precise.
The important thing is sensitivity, not precision. Instantly knowing which system is hurting. Then I call up the appropriate system parameters and compare them to the ideal mission profile. I can usually fix the trouble with the help of the ship's diagnostic library. If not, I call company control on the moon.
So your main job is troubleshooting?
Yes. Like you troubleshoot your body? Filthy fool couldn't find your liver with both hands. I make decisions regarding the maintenance of the ship.
It doesn't sound very exciting.
It is. Looking at her expectantly. She doesn't continue.
You must have quite a technical background.
For a woman, say it, fool. No, I majored in classical Latin and Greek. The technical part is easy. Any reasonably intelligent woman could do it. There are no male slowboat pilots. I don't suppose your censor wants me to discuss that. You'll just have to go ask a 12-year-old. She flashes him a bright metal smile. Much nicer than... Chime. Weak try at an urbane chuckle. There's an interesting side benefit to your job. I'll bet viewers would be surprised to know how old you are. She lets him wait just long enough as he opens his mouth to save himself. 65.
Now, isn't that marvelous?
You could pass for 20. As could anybody who didn't have to contend with gravity, and sun, and wind, and this chime that passes for your food and drink and air. I've spent most of my life immersed in oxygenated fluorocarbon, weightless,
fed a perfect diet, exercised by machines. But your job is dangerous. Not very. Perhaps 1 in 30 is lost. More dangerous than holovision.
His image turns a little fuzzy. She touches the filthy knob to sharpen him.
The atomic drive itself must be hazardous.
Carries her contaminated hand into the bathroom, listening.
Not to mention meteors and...
Fool.
No, actual catastrophes are very rare.
She washes the offended fingers carefully.
The dangerous time is turnaround when the ship is going with maximum velocity. It's supposed to flip and slow down for the last half of the journey.
Leaves the soap on warm, clean fingers.
Sometimes they don't flip, though. Just keep going faster and faster. Too fast for the company's rescue ship.
How terrible. Standing in front of the set, dry hand tugs elastic, urgent. Clothes.
They just keep going.
Forever. Ecstasy. Oh.
The pilot may live for centuries. Well, if ever a cliché was true, that does sound like a fate worse than death.
Fool. She nods soberly.
Indeed it does.
Fool, fool, oh damn, doesn't last this way. She sinks back onto the bed and starts to cry.
Fry them dead.
He puts a filthy finger to his lips.
Well, are you, going to be on Earth long?
Only another 2 days. Hurting herself, she stops, wipes eyes. Soap sting brings new tears.
I like being back in New York, but the gravity is tiring. The air makes me cough. I look forward to going out again.
Last time. Fry the bastards.
Saturn this time?
No. For a change, I'm going to the inner system. Taking 500 colonists to the new Venus settlement.
Taking them to burn. Is that more dangerous? I mean, I don't know much about space, but isn't there a danger that you could fall into the sun?
She smiles politely.
No, none.
Sharp metal teeth. She runs her tongue along behind her teeth, but the switches aren't connected.
It would take as much energy to fall into the sun as it takes to escape from the solar system.
Less to skim it, though.
Fry.
All that gravity. I suppose it might be possible. I've never made the calculation. Characteristic velocity 17.038 emos. Exit inclination 0.117 rad. Goodbye, solar system. Goodbye, filth.
Blank stare.
Yes.
Oh, Jimmy's giving me the signal.
Right at perihelion. Goose it all the way up. Emergency override. 19 G's. Crush their dry, baked bodies into dust.
I'm afraid we've run out of time.
Cargo ship baked to sterile dust.
We certainly have enjoyed having you here, Lydia.
He holds out his hand, and she looks at it. Bound for the stars, forever young, the dear ship inside of my ecstasy.
Thank you.
That's one of only 2 prose stories I've written in one sitting. If it happened more often, I'd probably write a lot of them. Instant gratification. Normally, though, my short stories accrete at the same slow rate as the novels, 500 or 600 words on a good day. Like most people who write fiction for a living, I spend most of my time on novels. Not only are they more remunerative than short stories, but they feel more serious, more worthwhile. That's a fallacy, of course. One good short story is worth more than a closet full of mediocre novels. But the feeling is real, and the practical side of it can't be disputed. A person who writes as slowly as I do would have to hit Playboy or The New Yorker every month to make a living from short stories. I don't want to appear to be making a virtue out of slow writing. Balzac, Stendhal, Dostoevsky, Stevenson, Dickens, the list goes on and on, were all good, careful writers who managed to turn out thousands of words a day, most of them with dipped pens. Stendhal even kept a pocket watch on his writing desk, requiring himself to write one page, 250 words, every 15 minutes. Stevenson famously wrote the 40,000-word Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in one long, rather drug-crazed sitting. If these guys had had word processors, a degree in literature would take 8 years. Anyhow, novels are the meat and the gravy, but short stories are the succulent dessert.
Their irresistible attraction is that the end is always in sight. There's a special satisfaction to finishing something, anything, and we slowpokes have to wait a couple of years to get that satisfaction from a novel. I think this desire to actually get things finished is the main reason I returned to poetry after more than a decade of deliberately not writing any. I started out writing only poetry. My first poem was published when I was 9 years old, and it must have been good training, since when I did finally sit down to try fiction, I sold the first two stories I wrote. But when I decided to become a full-time writer, I made the cold-blooded decision that the poetry had to go. I couldn't afford to spend time on work that would eventually be paid for with two copies of an obscure journal. I did allow myself to write a song every now and then, usually as a reward for finishing a book. I always felt a little churlish about this, as if I had abandoned a dear relative who had helped me get started in the business. But business is business, I told myself, and one thing a freelance writer does not do is ply his lance for free. My resolve started to weaken a few summers back when my wife and I were Brit-railing around England. Eventually, we came to Ellesmere, a quaint little tourist town in the Lake District. Ellesmere is where Wordsworth lived, his strangely romantic life with Dorothy, his sister, and their cottage there is open to tourists. Wordsworth was one of my favorites when I was young, so I looked forward to seeing where he had lived and worked. But I wasn't prepared for the intensity of the experience. I don't believe in ghosts, but I do know that some people leave a presence behind in the place where they lived, a palpable stamp that their personality embedded there. Hemingway's house in Key West has it, as does the room where Samuel Johnson rode herd over his minions assembling the great dictionary. The mansion where Toulouse-Lautrec's brooding, crippled genius developed, the laboratory where Edison slaved, the small square of stones that's the remains of the cabin on Walden Pond. Wordsworth's cottage had it in every board, and the spirits suffused out to include the hills and heaths, the lakes and streams, where he and Dorothy would stride along on their daily 10 or 20 mile hikes, stopping every now and then to jot down a few lines or a stanza. Note: Dorothy was quite a good writer herself, and her brother was not above filching from her. The lines, "My heart leaps up when I behold a rainbow in the sky," and "The child is father to the man," evidently originated in her diary. End of note.